All right, guys, you ready?
Yep.
I'm going to read something out of the Tao book. This one's called Indifference. For a true master, sitting on a throne is no different than sitting on dirt. A true master is indifferent to the ways of society. Ambition, knowledge, and religion are equally uninteresting. Why? Because all these things are in the realm of human definition. The holy person transcends all identity. Therefore, wealth or poverty, good or bad, violence or peace makes no difference. Dichotomies are no longer valid to such a person. Do you find this hard to believe? The degree that you find this difficult to accept indicates the degree to which you are shackled by dualism or dichotomy. True enlightenment comes from understanding the oneness of all reality, the good and the bad, the light and the dark, the painful and the comfortable. Such a realization leads to a perception that all things are truly equal. A master sees nutrition and disease as the same, life and death as the same, morality and immorality as the same, insanity and sanity as the same. If you give the master something to eat, they will eat. If they have nothing to eat, they forget that there was ever such an activity. There is no polarity in their lives. We ordinary people cannot do this. We make distinctions, defend ourselves and our territories. We feel safe only inside declared boundaries in our little boxes. This is the way we define ourselves, but our identities are also our prisons. Only a master knows the meaning of liberation and has complete freedom.
2-minute meditation, followed by the prayer.
Prayer.
God, please lay aside everything I think I know about this weekend, the big book, alcoholism, addiction, the 12 steps, myself, and especially you, God, so I may have an open mind and new experience. Help me see the truth. Amen.
I was moved to read that meditation because of what I've been talking about today and some of last night, which is this idea that God can be found in the dark and the light. He can be found in the good and the bad. He can be found in the hatred and the love. He's the creator and the destroyer. So we will enter a new dimension of existence if we can really start working with this concept. But it says we ordinary people cannot do this. It's very difficult, and it requires a lot of practice and discipline to look at the world this way, and having a group of people around you that you can discuss this concept with. But it's true freedom. There's a guy named Jay Krishnamurti who I'm a big fan of, and one of the things he talks about is true freedom comes in the form of being able to doubt and question everything that crosses your path. So we don't always have to subscribe to the boxes that we exist in, because the boxes are a form of a prison. Anything outside of our box, we immediately reject without any investigation. So one of the things I will invite you to do is investigate everything. Ask questions. What do you mean by that? Just how do you do that? Perhaps this can be something I can apply to my own personal recovery. Just because the people that raised me don't believe it or don't agree with it, and it wasn't a belief system that I was given, doesn't make it not true for you. Look at your experience. So.
All right. So I told you that story about the the time where I was at the lake, where the choice whether or not to walk down the patio to have that drink or not was not made by me. Bottom of page 24. When this sort of thinking is fully established, an individual with alcoholic or addict tendencies, he has probably placed himself beyond human aid. That's that talking about how the stove won't burn me this time when I put my hand on it. And unless locked up, may die or go permanently insane. Okay? So, as was evident in my story, there was nothing that I did to create that. So that defense must come from a higher power. Something beyond human aid. If you still have power, choice, and control over drinking, you probably still have some power. But if you don't, well, welcome. So page 25, it says there is a solution, right? Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for a successful consummation, right? So nobody liked really working the steps. But we saw that it really worked in Brandon and Tarek. And you had come to believe, we hope, in the hopeless futility of life as you've been living it previously. So therefore, when Tarek and Brandon approached you, there was nothing left for you to do but pick up the spiritual toolkit that we're laying at your feet. Then you will find much of heaven, and you'll be rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which you had never dreamed. We talked a little bit earlier about that fourth dimension of existence that doesn't look like what you think it looks like. Then we skip a little bit further down, or we'll actually go right. The great fact is this and nothing less. But Tarek and Brandon have had deep, effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized their whole attitudes towards life, towards their fellows, and towards God's universe. I can tell you today that the central fact of Brandon and Tarek's life is the absolute certainty that the Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. Our Creator has commenced to accomplish those things for which we could never have done by ourselves. We didn't do it, guys. We've been passengers on this experience. Now, if that sounds a little crazy to you, cool. But I mean, until you've gotten to that place where you're getting lived through by whatever this power is, instead of forcing the existence to happen, you're going to struggle. You still might struggle the other way, but at least you're going to be a little more neutral to it. We believe that there is no middle-of-the-road solution. If you're as messed up as we were, you have but two alternatives. Go on to the bitter end, blotting out the intolerable existence of your situation best you could. The other is to accept spiritual help. If you've got a third option on the table, a new job, new girl, just get out of this godforsaken program that I'm in, IOP, that's going to work. Aftercare, that's going to work. If you've got a third option other than bitter end, spiritual help, you might not be done. You have to concede to your innermost self that there is nothing other than spiritual help. And let's be clear, bitter end and spiritual help may look like death to you in both cases, because you haven't accepted that there's the possibility that there is a power that loves you more than you could possibly imagine. Cool. Try that. Come back when you're ready. Page 27. Kind of in the middle of the page, ideas, emotions, and attitudes were once the guiding forces of the lives of Brandon and Tarek are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. Okay? I'm wondering at what time in my life you would have told me that I would be sitting in front of a room of a bunch of drunks and alcoholics, or alcoholics and addicts, with this guy named Tarek, talking about the power of God in my life. I don't know specifically when you could have told me that, and I would have actually believed you. Because there were very few Saturdays that Brandon didn't find some reason to just think about himself and get all banged up. Okay? But the way I used to live, those ideas, emotions, and attitudes that were previously the guiding force of my life, they're gone now. They don't exist. And now when Tarek says, hey, you want to do a workshop for, you know, a couple programs with me on this weekend, or, you know, he gives me a month that says pick a weekend, I wouldn't have, I mean, why? A, why would I want to do that? And B, why would anybody listen to me? Because they're forced to, but that's, you know, beside the point. But so guys, this is what Tarek and I are living today. Is there anything else on there? Mm-hmm. Alright, so page 30. Most of us have been unwilling to admit that we were real alcoholics or addicts. No person likes to think that he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking and using careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people, prove that we could smoke crack like a gentleman, prove that we could just shoot a little bit of dope.
Can I say something? Mm-hmm. Like, I want to go back a minute. That paragraph Brandon read, it says that spiritual experiences come in the form of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Ideas, attitudes, and emotions which were once guiding us are cast aside. So there's some questions there you need to ask yourself. Are there aspects of the way I've lived life that have now been cast aside? And are there new ideas coming to the surface now about what it means to live life? And I'll tell you something that was vital for me in early recovery is when I was new, I had this desire to sponsor. I don't know where, it wasn't of me. But I remember this message being delivered to me that said, if you don't sponsor people, you're not going to stay clean and sober. And so I had this overwhelming desire to help people. And I remember those, you know, I would sponsor these guys. I had 4 months. And I remember I sponsored a few guys from Mar. And Mar would find out that I only had 4 months, and they would fire me as a sponsor. Right? There's several programs in Atlanta that found out I only had 5 or 6 months, and they would force the guys to fire me as a sponsor. This is how, like, the first 6 or 7 guys I sponsored, once they found out how much time I had, I got fired. And then there was this guy named John. And I know John to this day. And I took him through the work. And I watched a spiritual experience. And I got bit by the bug. You know, one of the most powerful things about that experience was we were sitting there, and this is going to go into the fifth step a little bit. He was sharing his fifth step with me, and he shared some stuff in his fifth step. And I said, I get it, brother. I mean, I've done that too. And he started crying. And I asked him why he was crying, and he said, the last time my fist stepped this, the guy got up and told me he couldn't sponsor me anymore. Yeah. So they're the human bond and the human connection that developed in that first fifth step, the very first one I ever listened to. It was one of those things that grounded me in this process. But what I really want to emphasize, and I'll turn it back over to Brandon, is like, if you don't have a desire inside of you to help other people, you probably ain't done. And you sure as hell ain't going to make it. Not if you fit the description. If everything Brandon and I have talked to you about yet last night and today, and you're like, yeah, that's me, yeah, that's me, yeah, that's me, and then there's no desire to work these steps and help other people, you probably are not done.
You know, and we don't say that to be ugly towards you. A lot of these things where we say you may not be done, it's not intended to hurt your feelings. It's not intended to question your manhood or anything like that. We want to tell you the truth. We want to tell you the truth out of our experience and what we've seen here. I say things like this in meetings, and I'll have guys come up to me afterwards. I said something very similar to what he just said. And a guy said, that scares the hell out of me. And I said, why is that? And he goes, because I don't know that I've reached that place where you talk about where I'm willing to do anything. Now, I told him, I said, if you've got a good sponsor, they can probably take you to that experience through the steps, which I do believe. It's a lot harder. But he's like, man, that makes me feel like I'm going to go back out there. And I said, okay, well, this is where we are. If you go back out there, and hopefully you'll get back.
Well, you think about it. Do most people get clean, stay clean, and die clean in these rooms? Very few. Very few people.
And this idea that, you know, we want to help everybody. We want to open the meetings up to as many people as we can. Why? I want to help alcoholics and addicts, real ones. You're a hard drinker? You're a hard addict? Good God, if I could just, you know, come to the realization that I'm not a real alcoholic, then I wouldn't have to do all this stuff in my spare time that I do to help people. I wouldn't have to meditate. I wouldn't have to do all this stuff. Now, the difference is that today I do all that stuff because I like it. But if you're not willing to do it, that's cool. Let us know how your experience is. If anything, this guy, Richie, he came and he would hang around for a while and he would ask some questions, and me and this other guy, Drew, we'd poke and prod him, and he'd be like, you guys are assholes. And he copped some resentments, and he'd let us know about it, and then finally he gets clean, right? And he said, you know, I used to think you guys were the biggest dicks in the world. He said, but when I look back, he says, you were the only two that ever told us the truth. Well, ever told me the truth.
I think he wanted to call me an asshole yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, you guys kept saying the same thing over and over again. He said, and it took me some time until I could get to the point where I could actually hear it. And once I actually heard it, I knew that you guys actually were trying to help me. I would risk hurting your feelings to save your life. That's how I feel about it. And so if we're somehow making you feel like there's no hope for you, good. Maybe you'll be motivated to actually do something about it. So back on 30, it says the idea that somehow, someday, he will control. Anytime you see the word control in the book, anytime you see the word power in the book, anytime you see the word choice in the book, you can insert the other word. The idea that somehow, someday, he will have control over, he will have power over, he will have choice over his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it to the great gates of insanity or death. He had to learn. We learned that we had to, one day at a time, concluded we were alcoholics. No. We had to fully concede to our innermost self. Fully concede means there's no doubt that I got this thing. And if there's no doubt that I got this thing, then I only have one course of action. Actually, Brandon and Tarek only offer one course of action. There are other ways that you can go and try to get so clean and sober, and they may work. This is the only one we've got. Okay? Do you want to hit more on that? Or?
You guys know when you get one of those little tickets into the movies and it says admit one? It means to let you in, right? So for the first step, when you talk about the first step that hangs up on the wall, it says we admitted we were powerless over all mind-altering substances, dash, that our lives have become unmanageable. When I used to sit in the counseling sessions or groups and treatment, it was easy for me to admit being powerless. A, I wanted everybody in the room to accept me and approve of me, so yeah, I admit I'm powerless. But I had no concession to my innermost self that I was truly an addict. And concession is totally different from admission. Concession is to let something in begrudgingly. I really don't want to let this idea in, but my experience abundantly confirms to me that it's true, that I've lost power, choice, and control. So it's a deep, gut-level surrender imposed on you by your experience, not because you're making a choice to surrender. It's a choice that comes from a place of no choice. And surrender is like, you know, samurais, when they're in battle and they surrender, they put the sword down, they're done fighting, they put their hands up, they walk away. We don't want to do that. We've got all kinds of terms and conditions on our surrender.
Yeah.
So, with all that being said, here's a consideration for you, because later on in the big book it tells you the great realities deep down within, right? The fundamental idea of God is deep down within every man, woman, and child. So this we're tapping an unsuspecting inner resource. And so when we concede to our innermost self that we're alcoholic and addict, are we conceding to God deep down within, God, I'm cool that you made me an addict and alcoholic. I'm okay that I have to do this work. Or is there something deep down inside that's giving God the middle finger because he made you this way and you've got to do this work? Because it's really important you look at that, because you're about to work the rest of these steps based on this idea of God. And if there's an anger or a resentment towards this power for making you this way, it's going to be an arduous and difficult task going through these steps at something you're angry at. And I get the resentment inventory can address it, but that's... If you're going to write resentments and that resentment is there, that's the resentment that needs to be written. I'm angry at God for making me an addict. And see what happens. But yeah.
Did anybody choose to like put their life on hold and go into a treatment or recovery place?
They think they did, some of them.
Okay. Do you see a lot of people that aren't alcoholic or addict just going to recovery centers and treatment places?
It's a tough one.
Yeah.
In this day and age, you probably do because there's...
That you didn't get pinched by a DUI or your parents didn't send you there or something like that. Because, I mean, it seems like... You know, I believe part of the problem today is that the world shelters people from their bottom.
Yeah.
Is you get a DUI, they send you right into treatment. Well, or you have to go to a bunch of meetings. What is getting some sheet signed going to teach me about whether or not I'm actually an alcoholic? You know, when you. When you have the same experience over and over and over again that I did, and you ruined your life, like, there's no questioning it for me, guys. There was no, like, convincing me when we got to this. Like, it was like, when we get to the ABCs that we'll see on page 60, it wasn't like, so convince me that you're an alcoholic. It's like, how much time you got? right? Like, I'm not fighting this stuff anymore. And I think that society today tries to keep people, you know, we want it to be, you want your landing to be on this really huge-ass pillow that's going to be real soft, so you kind of, we're going to coast you in, you're going to come down, there you go. Now, are you okay with being an alcoholic or an addict? That's right. Let me give you a background, right? Because that is not what it looked like for me. Like, it was, you know, like mangledness, right? Yeah. Does that motivate me to do something different? Yeah. You betcha.
You said something about being angry at God for making you this way. Is that to say that we didn't, since he's omnipotent, all-knowing, and all-powerful, that he knew what path we were going, despite the fact that we believe we chose to go down this road?
No, I mean, that's how I view it. Yeah. I'm not telling you got to view it that way. But it's important to find out if you have some deep-seated anger about having to do this work and being made this way. I guarantee you somebody sitting in this room right now is pissed they got to do this work. And they're pissed that they've lost control, power, and choice.
And on page 34 it says, whether such a person can quit on a non-spiritual basis depends upon to the extent which he has already lost the power to choose whether or not he will drink. So if you actually still have choice, just choose. Don't do this shit.
Choose.
Now, if you no longer have choice, good news, bad news. Spiritual help's the only way. So, are you really going to go to this thing that you're so pissed off at to ask for help? It's kind of why you got to figure it out.
So, this chapter, we're going to give you the Cliff Notes version of it really quick. It's probably the most misunderstood chapter in the big book because it's about guys that all thought they had a choice. And a lot of people in the rooms think that after they work the steps or try to submit to this way of life, they've now regained the power to choose. But if you lose one, you lose all three and you never get them back. And I put some really good questions up on the board. I invite you guys to put these in your books. You see those two questions? If I'm an alcoholic and or addict, powerless over alcohol and or drugs, and never going to regain control, do I have a choice? And then the follow-up question is what I love. How can I admit powerlessness over alcohol and drugs today, then after working the steps, say I have a choice today that I ever did?
Does that mean that you unwork the first step?
So you're no longer powerless, you've taken control, and you now have a choice.
The first step is real clear. We're powerless over drugs and alcohol. Powerless, just kind of break it down, means no power. Choice implies power. So am I powerless or not? Can I unwork the first step?
You have power through being spiritually fit.
But I don't create that power. That power comes from a source that's bigger than me.
Guys, it's like I said last night. I couldn't even tell you the last time I asked God to keep me clean and sober. I don't wake up and the thought never occurs to me that I'm not going to be clean and sober today. Just like it's been, you know, just doesn't exist.
Do you wake up in the morning and ask God to let you breathe oxygen today?
No.
It's necessary. You'll die without it.
So this chapter introduces us to four guys. The first guy is the exceptional man. He's a few pages back. He's a guy who drank, had a nervous disposition, but he was so intent on being successful in business. Although he had the physical craving, he had no mental obsession. He said to himself, I'm going to be successful in business, and when I retire, I'll drink. He starts drinking when he retires, and he's just as bad off physically as he was 25 years ago, and he's dead in 4 years. So they're trying to say, you know, if you a prolonged period of sobriety or clean time does not qualify you to drink or use in a new way. This is why we're losing so many people right now to this heroin epidemic. You know, they come into the rooms, they get some clean time under their belt, they go back out there and they shoot the same dope and they die.
There was a guy that used to come to a meeting that I used to go to. We'll call him Larry because that was his name. He actually ran a treatment program for a while. Then he fell victim to the delusion that he could drink. He parked his car in the rear end of a police cruiser in Roswell, Georgia, and was forced to wear an ankle bracelet thingy that tested his sweat for alcohol for 4 years. Larry never sounded right. He had a bunch of slogans that he repeated. Larry got the ankle bracelet off. Larry's no longer with us. He thought, after his period of sobriety, that he could drink like other people. He was wrong.
Exception, yes, sir.
Would y'all consider that guy that stayed sober for 25 years on his by making up his mind a real alcoholic?
Yeah, you know why? Because on page 21, they say that, what about the real alcoholic? He may or may not start off as a moderate drinker and may or may not become a continuous hard drinker. But at some stage in his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption after he starts. So I call, there are alcoholics and addicts with power, and then there are alcoholics and addicts without power. And the ones that don't have any power are the ones that not only have the physical, but also have the mental. But there are some people that physically, when they're using, they're in it.
Yeah.
Right? We call them the acute. The people that have both the mental and the physical are called chronic. Acute versus chronic. And you can go from acute to chronic. Just because you're acute right now doesn't mean you can't go to chronic. So.
And the exceptional man at 30 might have been a potential. But after he took that break and came back, he wasn't potential anymore. He was full on. So.
Mm-hmm.
Progressive illness.
I'm sorry. You said acute is with power.
I got to read this for them. This will help you make sense of it.
Yeah. And we can get anything that we read or go through, we can get you. One email to you.
All right. So, from the beginning of time, there have existed two types of problem drinkers or drug users, chronic and acute. Acute problem drinkers or users have a serious problem, but when they see the destructiveness of their drinking or using and make up their minds to quit, they do, and they can stay clean and sober on their own. They don't need the, just like the exceptional man. They don't need to constantly help others. They don't need to work the steps, go to meetings, and sponsor, even though from time to time they may indulge in some of these activities. These actions are optional and not a matter of life and death. On the other hand, there's the chronic problem drinker or drug user who, no matter what is at stake, no matter how sincere the desire, they eventually suffer from their abstinence to the point where they, in a desperate move, will return to drinking and using time and time again until it eventually kills them. They are locked up or take their own life. These are the people who programs such as AA, CA, HA, CMA were designed for. If you can stay clean and sober without it, that is a good thing. But please don't lord it over those that will die without it. The people that welcomed you with love and open arms into a fellowship you didn't need. Who knew?
So, you know that exercise that we went through when we went through two wives and the four types of alcoholics and addicts? Without fail, every time I sit down with a guy, he always wants to be a type 1 or type 2, and he falls into a type 3 or type 4, right? So in the beginning, we don't want to be as bad as we think we are. Or we don't want to think we're as bad as we actually are. Here's what's funny. You go to meetings, everybody wants to share like they were worse than they really were. So what happens? Why does nobody really want to be here, and then they get here and they want to explain to everybody else that I was way worse than I thought I was? And I think that it's both are ego-centered, right? The guy that stands up here from the podium and gives you his war story about all the terrible things that he did and wants to tell you a drunk log and not talk about working any steps or about God working in their life, still ego-centered. Absolutely ego-centered. Because they still, they take pride in all the stuff that they did. Look at all the women I slept with. Look at all the different drugs I did. I'm awesome. You guys need to like me.
So exceptional man, prolonged period of sobriety qualifies me to drink like normal people. You've got Jim. Jim is a little bit different. He's got a resentment brewing. He's working for a business he used to own. I think we would all be resentful, right? Shows up to work on Tuesday. He's out in the country, and suddenly, out of nowhere, the thought to put the whiskey in the milk. So the insanity of that idea comes suddenly and so overpowering that you can't bring into your consciousness with sufficient force. So it's really vague trying to remember, do I lose control when I drink? What happened last time I drank? We can't bring it into our consciousness. And so that story is illustrating that. It gives us insanity as being lack of proportion and the ability to think straight. Jim had no proportion once he started drinking, and he sure as hell couldn't think straight if he's thinking whiskey and milk together ain't going to make a difference.
And he had done nothing to advance the spiritual condition.
Yeah. He worked the first three steps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And showed up at a bunch of meetings.
Yeah. He failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual
life.
He
probably made coffee and set up the chairs, yeah. But that's it.
Now, the jaywalker is simply the guy that cannot get the idea of the syringe in his arm out of his head. He can't get that warm feeling that comes over us as soon as it goes into our body. And he can't forget that fucking 20 rock on the top of that stem. That's all he chases. That's the jaywalker. And then you get Fred. Now, Fred's entirely different. Fred's a straight pimp. You know, what I mean by that is Fred is a successful businessman. Fred has all these friends. Fred's family is doing very well. Fred goes to Washington, D.C. to present accounting evidence, and it goes perfect. And he even says it's the end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. And he's walking across that bar, that threshold of that bar in the hotel, and he thinks a highball might be good. Out of nowhere, the strange mental blank spot hits him. Not a bad day, the end of a perfect day. So we've got different states of mind preceding a relapse. You know, we all think we know what the day looks like when that's going to show up. This is one of the most baffling features of alcoholism and addiction when it shows up out of the blue, out of nowhere. You're like, how the hell did this happen?
I don't have to meditate because I know that that's not going to that I can stay sober without that. I don't have to make these amends because I know that I can stay sober without doing that.
Mm-hmm. Let's read a little bit about Fred. Bottom of page 41. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time I had not thought of the consequences at all. I couldn't bring into my consciousness with sufficient force the pain of the suffering and humiliation. I had commenced to drink or use as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale and the fucking cocaine was baby laxative. I don't know. I now remembered what my alcoholic and drug addict friends had told me, how they prophesized that if I was an alcoholic or an addict, and I had an alcoholic addict mind, that the time and place would come when I would drink and use again.
Brandon and Tarek sat up there, did that whole weekend in front of us, and told me this over and over and over again, but I wasn't willing to listen.
You remember that guy? We did one of these a few months ago. This guy was sitting on the front row, and he was trying to say, are you trying to foreshadow my relapse? I forget how I answered the question. I was like, dude, if you fit the description in this book and you don't do what's in this book, I promise you, you're going to relapse. I said something in that effect. Maybe I'm paraphrasing, but we do prophesize around here. You know, we prophesize, unfortunately, and 9 times out of 10, we're right. So they had said, though I did raise a fight or defense, it would one day give way for some trivial reason for having a drink. She broke up with me. They didn't give me the raise. They hurt my feelings. Well, just that did happen and more, for what I had learned of addiction and alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment that I had an addict alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help me in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow. These are important admissions and concessions to make when you're reflecting on your experience with drugs and alcohol. You want to do the next suit?
Yeah. So then, Tarek and Brandon came in to see me. They grinned and chuckled the way that they do, and I didn't like that so much. And Brandon and Tarek asked me if I thought myself a real alcoholic or addict and if I was really licked this time. Hopefully you concede on both propositions. They sat up there the entire weekend and they piled on me heaps of evidence to the effect that an alcoholic mentality or addict mentality such as you may have exhibited recently was a hopeless condition. Brandon and Tarek cited cases out of their own experience by the dozen. Hopefully, you're hooking up with some of what we're saying, and that's this process is snuffing out the last flicker of conviction that you can do the job yourself. We hope. That's why we're here. Then they spent that whole damn weekend outlining the spiritual program of action, which they and a bunch of their buddies had followed successfully. Though you may have been a nominal church man, our proposals are probably not intellectually hard to swallow. But our program of action, though entirely sensible, was pretty drastic. It meant that you would have to throw several lifelong conceptions out the window. That's not going to be easy. But the moment you make up your mind to go through with the process, you will get this feeling that will come over you, and you will feel like your alcoholic or addict condition is being relieved. Quite as important will be the discovery that spiritual principles will solve only your alcohol and drug problems.
Say that again.
Oh yeah, it doesn't read that way. The way that it reads is, quite as important was the discovery that spiritual principles will solve all your problems. Does anybody know what all means? There'll be a quiz on this one later.
Every single one of them.
Okay, so spiritual principles will solve every single one of your problems. Then you will be brought into a way of living infinitely more satisfying and, we really hope, more useful than the life that you lived before. Perhaps your old manner of living was by no means a bad one. But after a year, 6 months, 2 years, 5 years, 6 years, 10 years on this path, you would not exchange your best moments back then for the worst you have now. You wouldn't go back even if you could. Okay, so what they just explained is how to do a 12-step call of a guy that's in a hospital or wherever. They just explained the whole thing. Great, great example of it. This book gives you directions on how to do everything related to recovery. You want to finish it off?
The big book's wonderful in summarizing everything you've covered to a certain point. On the bottom of page 43, there's three important questions. Once more, the addict or alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink or drug. Do you believe that? Do you think there are going to be certain times in your life where, boom, the intellectual sorting out process called a choice is unavailable to you? Second question, do you believe that except in a few rare cases, neither you nor any other human being can provide your defense?
Yes.
And do you believe your defense must come from a higher power?
Yes.
Okay. That wraps up the first half of the first step. We covered all of that to cover powerlessness.
Wow.
Yeah. That's the first half of the first step. So, fortunately, the rest of this stuff, Brandon and I moved through it pretty quick, but that's how important this first step is. 54 pages in this big book are dedicated to the first step. 54 pages. All right, guys, let's take a 15-minute break.